Hello and welcome to Undaunted, where each episode I talk with fellow podcasters from all walks of life and discuss what went well, what went wrong, and what just didn't matter. We'll share the good, the bad, the many laughs and lessons along the way. I'm Amos, and today I'm joined by Tyler Marchant, a.k.a. Future Horse Pod of Cynical Cartoons. We'll get into that here shortly. Unfortunate Associates and Tainami at futurehorsepod.com. Tyler, how are you today?
I'm doing well, man. Did you say Amos? Because I thought your name was Anthony. Is that like a stage name or is it a last name?
That is, oh man, my nickname. So that's my nickname. Ethan Kane is basically my stage name, if you will. It's my Twitter handle and stuff like that. But one of the many things that has gone wrong, if you were to say, in my podcasting career, is that I have so many different names and pseudonyms.
Right.
So...
I always wanted like a ridiculous shock AM morning DJ name. You know, like there was one point my cousin in my phone is Brundle and I'm in his phone is Trundle, because at one point we were like, yeah, we're definitely just going to call each other Brundle and Trundle. Brundle is from The Fly with Jeff Goldblum. He's Seth Brundle. Mm. And I think Trundle is like a Always Sunny in Philadelphia reference. And I kind of wish that I had stuck with that, because what if I did have a ridiculous stage name and that was, you know,
right.
I don't know. It seems like a fun element to have, to performance, I guess.
Well, I can tell you that it's done nothing for my career. So, you know, take that for what you will.
I mean, I heard somebody on Doug Loves Movies a couple weeks ago, or maybe a month ago now, who just, I mean, his stage name is just Apples. And he's like, yep, I'm Apples. That's me. I know it's stupid. And because it's stupid, people are going to remember me. And I'm like, well, I guess I did remember him. If his name was, you know, John Jackson, I wouldn't know who that person was. So,
right, but
yeah,
now,
I guess it works in certain elements. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you have three podcasts that you regularly do. You're involved with others. Man, you are a busy dude.
Yeah, I mean... We were talking about it before the show. I'm kind of just like at a place in my life right now where I'm like 23. And if I put something out and a couple thousand people listen to it, I'm going to keep doing that, you know, no matter how much time it takes out of my week, because I want to make this thing a full-time thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's actually four shows right now. Three of them are bi-weekly and one of them is every week. The one that you probably left off is the Adam Sandcast, which was the first thing that I started. And I don't recommend that anybody goes and listens to the old episodes, but we're really trucking right now. We decided that we were going to watch the films of Adam Sandler in chronological order.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a terrible idea. And since then, three other podcasts have popped up that do the exact same thing. Like with Adam Sandler's films, not like they just watch like an actor's films in chronological order, but there's three Adam Sandler podcasts that now do have that premise.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't think any of them are very good, including mine. So,
well, I listen to yours and it's very interesting to listen to I would go so far as to say you and your co-host aren't huge fans of Adam Sandler's work
in the
films. But you don't really, take that, and it doesn't skew your opinions of the movies. They seem fairly genuine that they're just really shitty movies.
Which, with the Adam Sandcast, where did you start? Did you start like at the beginning?
No, I started with the most recent one and started working my way back from there. So,
okay. Yeah. Good place to go from. basically it was the first thing that I ever did, you know, as a podcaster, as a performer at all, the first, any bit of content that I put out that people listen to. And I'm at this weird place now where like, I kind of feel like maybe I want to take down my back catalog on that show and my other show, main show, Cynical Cartoons. Cause like the first 46 episodes of Cynical Cartoons are just like awful sound quality, a totally different show than what it is now. And I don't know, do you listen to shows that have done that in the past? Have you ever considered doing that with something that you've made, or what do you think of that?
Most of the shows that I've done, other than Undaunted, which I've left the entire catalog on there because it's only all of like 9 episodes or whatever, for Ritual Misery, which is our weekly show, we have left all of them out there. They're all available. In fact, we've released our alpha episodes, the 3-hour rambling, incoherent, what in the world is going on? Who is it that's talking on an iPad?
Right.
A menagerie of crap. we've put that out there for our patrons as patron exclusives. And we've had people go back and listen to those and tell us, man, we are so glad you worked on that and
put
you made it better.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that we all have that kind of story, right? Like I started off with a rock band mic shared between two people, and that's such a horrible place to start from. And I just like didn't know, like if I had known that I could get enough equipment to make a show sound amazing with two people for like $100, I would have done that. Right. But that's just like the stuff that you don't know when you're starting out, unless you have some sort of like a support group behind you of podcasters, like a subreddit or a place on Twitter or Facebook or whatever it is.
Right. What actually got you into podcasting? I mean, what brought about the idea of, hey, let's do an Adam Sandler podcast and let's just go all through all of his movies. I mean, was that an idea that you got from somewhere? Was podcasting an idea that you got from somewhere, or how did that come about?
Yeah, I think that I've been listening to podcasts for about 6 or 7 years now. There was a friend of mine in high school who would drive me around, you know, to different places, save money on gas, carpool and all that. And he listened to the Rooster Teeth podcast a lot, which at the time I think was probably the Drunk Tank podcast. This was like 2010 or 2011. And I listened for like 5 years and sort of just realized after a while, like it's not that hard of a thing to do. Like there's a lot of very amateur podcasts out there. I've been listening for 5 years to like that and a lot of Earwolf shows. So I might as well like try it out, because I do want to do comedy for a living and I do want to make something, you know. Mm-hmm. I was in film school, and I kind of realized through film school that like it's just such a, like film is such a collaborative process, and like you can work on something for a year and it'll still turn out terrible, and then that's it. Maybe you'll get to make another movie next year. Maybe you'll never make anything again. And with podcasting, it's just kind of like you can determine everything about it. Like you determine what the episode is, you pick the guests, you spend all the time post-production to make it amazing. And it can kind of be like a one-man effort that you put out something every single week and like it's out there forever and it's free. So like you can just advertise the shit out of it and everybody who sees that might listen to it. And yeah, I mean, it took a while to build any kind of a listenership, but once I got there, you know, I'm happy with that.
You say any kind of a listenership. How big of a listenership are we talking? Are you in the thousands for each of your shows, or are you in the, like the Ritual Misery podcast is in the hundreds and it's a constant churn?
Right. It jumps around a lot. I've, you know, got four shows and they bounce around a lot. You know, like my show about anime has like 90 subscribers or something like that, as opposed to 1,000 on another show, 850 on another show, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't know why this show that's been around for 8 months only has 90 subscribers, because I think it's good. I don't know. And we work real hard on it, you guys. But usually on my biggest show, Unfortunate Associates, where we talk about a series of unfortunate events every week, it gets around 2,000 to 3,000 listens or downloads per episode. Which, yeah, those are some really good numbers. I'm happy with that. And that one kind of like grew super fast, as opposed to the other ones that just like steadily, you know, tried to make their way to where they are now.
Right. Now, what kind of things have you done in the last year or so to bolster your podcasting presence and make it better? Like where do you focus your attention when it comes to, hey, this needs to be improved?
I think a lot of it is, it can be so many things. I think the production quality is super important. Like nobody wants to listen to a show that sounds like dog shit. And I think that any amateur show with, you know, a $200 budget starting out can sound better than a professional show in a lot of cases. It's a lot of guesting on other people's shows and having them guest on mine and making sure that I give them a spot to promote and they give me a spot to promote, you know. And a lot of promoting on Twitter and Facebook and stuff like that, but doing other things other than just promoting constantly. Like you also have to like throw out jokes and interesting content other than just saying like, this is my episode, or else nobody's going to follow a Twitter account that just posts episode links all day, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's like a combination of those three things. And lately for cynical cartoons, it's been a lot of trying to get really great interviews on. I hired on a talent booker a couple weeks ago, Chris Revel, actually, a past guest on your show.
Mm-hmm.
And basically his whole job is just like to cold call and cold email voice actors and animators and directors in the animation industry and get, you know, 15 no's and one yes to come on the podcast, you know? And so far he's got that one. Yes, it's Phil Lamar, from Samurai Jack and, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends and Futurama and like a lot of really great stuff. And, that guy will be coming on sometime this month, I think in June.
Wow. That's awesome. How,
yeah.
What was your process before that for getting guests and
another same talent? Deal. Yeah. Whenever I wanted to get an interview, I would, just send out 100 emails. And luckily lately it's actually, I've been able to get like the emails of representation for big stars and stuff like that through work. Cause people at work have IMDb Pro and they can kind of just be like, here's Neil Patrick Harris's email. Like you'll never ever get him on the podcast, but you can definitely try, you know? And that one I spent like 3 months on and it didn't happen, you know? And it was just like, I need to hire somebody to do this for me kind of. But aside from that, it's finding people through Twitter or Reddit or Facebook that just host their own show and want to come on and just shoot the shit with me and talk about cartoons every week.
Right. And now one of the things that I hate most is when you get a yes from somebody, they're like, yeah, that sounds great. We can do that. And then 2 months later, you're still trying to get them on your show. You know, it's, man, that's just maddening. And then you finally give up and that's when they email you and you're like, hey, I'm available this Thursday, blah, blah, blah. And you're like,
right, right. Well, it's really interesting though. Like sometimes the people that are hard to get on Unfortunate Associates, we were trying to get people from, the series Unfortunate Events Netflix series, you know? So the first person that we actually had locked in for an interview was the, author of the books and the screenwriter of the series, Daniel Handler, Lemony Snicket, mm-hmm. who like is like a lifetime hero of mine. Like I read his books so much when I was a kid and I've always wanted to talk to him. So that was amazing. And then from there, we were sort of able to get a lot of the stars from the show and stuff like that because he was on the podcast. One of them, though, one of the people that plays Count Olaf's henchman in the Netflix series, like just kept saying, yeah, I want to do it. Yeah, I want to do it. And giving us dates and then rescheduling. And just like eventually I just stopped pursuing that because like at some point that guy isn't Neil Patrick Harris. And he's not like a name that anybody knows. So like, why do I keep working to get him, I guess, even though it would have been a fun conversation, I'd still have to do it someday. But like, sometimes you've got to let that fish go when it's been tugging for too long, you know?
Oh yeah. When you have a talent booked, like what is your process for actually having an engaging conversation with them? Because me, I mean, for this show, I just grab podcasters. I search on Reddit and podcasting groups on Facebook, stuff like that, and grab them on the show. And hell, I can talk podcasting forever. So
yeah, and I think that's something really cool about doing a podcast about podcasts is that you get to find people that specifically have a very niche shared interest with you, and you can also listen to their podcast and say like, hey, who is this guy? Oh, I listened to 2 episodes. I know who this is. You know. When I'm actually going to do an interview with somebody, I usually actually put out like a Q&A thing on Reddit or on Twitter and say like, hey, you know, Michael Price, the co-creator of F's for Family, is coming on the show this week. Anybody got any questions for a 15-year Simpsons writer / creator of a Netflix series, you know?
Right.
And then I'll get like 30 questions, you know, if it's a good guest. And then I just have to pick the 4 best ones of those and then also, you know, sprinkle in whatever I had come up with myself. I think for Phil Lamar, I'm going to have a lot to talk about because like Samurai Jack and Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends and Futurama, like that's like there's so much space to go there. And I only have 30 minutes anyway, you know,
right?
Like it's not hard to fill 30 minutes at all.
As far as all that goes, what have you found that just didn't work? Like what was your initial when you started getting guests on and, you know, started having a show with a little bit of success to it? What was the first thing that you cut? Like, you're like, hey, this doesn't work.
I think that I didn't get my first interview on the podcast until I was about 1.5 years into it, I think, into Cynical Cartoons. And so by that point, I had had so much experience. Like, I started out trying to have co-hosts that were people that I knew, you know, it was like my roommate in college or my brother, you know. And then like after five or six episodes, they would just be like, I'm not good at this. I don't like doing it and I don't have time to do it. And so I kind of just like had to reach out and find people online. And before I had started podcasting, I couldn't even like talk on the phone really. Like, I could talk on the phone to like my mom or something, but like I would like avoid doing some important phone call for like a week and a half because I just didn't want to talk on the phone. I was just too nervous or, you know, social anxiety or whatever. Mm-hmm. And by the time I had my first interview, I had already talked to, you know, 50 something strangers who I had never met before through Skype, just by finding them on Reddit or something like that, you know?
Wow.
And, yeah, I think that first one was, Ryan Elder from Rick and Morty. He's the composer. And that was a really cool experience because like I just kind of posted on the Rick and Morty subreddit, like, hey, does anybody want to come on the podcast this week? Just to viewers of the show. And then he said like, hey, I work on the show. I would love to come on. And kind of the fact that somebody like reached out to me and said, hey, I'd love to talk about Rick and Morty. I work on it, was like sort of what got my foot in the door to say like, okay, I feel comfortable now to sort of reach out to people, you know, that work on the things that I love.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, that worked out because I feel like if that hadn't happened, maybe I would have never sort of had the confidence to ever say like, maybe I can talk to somebody that animated Rugrats. I don't know. I haven't talked to anybody that worked on Rugrats. I don't know.
If you do, let me know, because that would be awesome. I might have to tune in just for that. It's one of my favorite cartoons when I was early teens. So
one of those voice actors on Rugrats, I think it's the actress that played Will or Dill, is somebody noteworthy, but I can't remember who it was. And so this isn't even a story. Sorry to go off on that. It doesn't mean anything. It's all pointless. I'll look it up, but I probably won't tell you who it is.
But that brings up an interesting point is, you know, one thing, do you do any of your shows live?
I would love to. I would love to do like the Facebook Live thing or the YouTube Live thing or anything like that. I would love to do a live show someday. That would be amazing. I've never done it before because I kind of always feel like it's going to become a train wreck, you know? Like I've had maybe out of like 300 episodes that I've recorded, I've had like three or four that I didn't release. And two of those were because of technical issues. So like really there's only been like one or two episodes that went so off the rails that I could just never, ever let anybody hear them. But I think that the thing about doing something live online is that I spend a lot of time in post-production to sort of fix up the show, take out a lot of like ums and uhs and stutters and stuff like that. And so, especially with a 2-second Skype delay, if, you know, if my guest takes a little while to come up with something, some joke, and it ends up being really, really funny, but it took them 2 seconds to get there, then it's just like awkward in a live setting, but I can make it sound charismatic and outgoing and well delivered, you know, in the final edit.
Wow. I was going to ask, because often during a live show, we do Ritual Misery Live. We've been doing it live for a little over, well, I guess about a year and a half now of the almost 3 years we've been doing the show. And there are plenty of moments where there's a completely awkward break in the conversation and it just takes usually it's my fault. I mean, I'll just be honest. I'm usually the one that's like, hey, here's a string. Let's pull that. And sometimes it just goes off in a direction that neither the guest nor my co-host can keep up with. And we just keep it in. It's just part of the character of the show, if you will. But you have an interesting career in that you are a professional editor. So on your shows, how do you make the distinction between, hey, you know, this is something that can go really well, or this is an awkward pause that needs to stay in there because it just adds to the character, or is it just a matter of let's just trim out all the flack and keep it straight to the subject?
Yeah, I think awkward pauses really only work if there's some comedic value to them or if somebody brings it up. Like if somebody says something like really, really insane and then everybody's just like speechless for 3 seconds, I'm not going to cut that out because that's just like such a natural reaction to have nothing to say, you know, in response to somebody saying something so off the walls. But a lot of the time it does just come down to Skype delay or lag or something like that, that like, you know, if I can make the show sound as natural as possible, I'm definitely going to do that.
I typically don't ask people on the show more about their process and how they do things behind the scenes, but I'm asking you, and I'm kind of getting to the point of, you edit other people's podcasts, you release your own podcast, but like I said before, every podcast has a voice, a certain character to it. Do you have problems distinguishing between the character of another show versus yours? Do you have problems with them melding together to where they kind of sound the same with just different people on, you know, on the mic? Or is that something that you don't even consider? Is that just a natural flow to you?
Yeah, I think that a lot of the time when you're working on another show, you have to take into account what they're going for. Like, I guess that if you come in and start working on a show and from day one, it sounds totally different than before, you kind of have to look at it and say, okay, does it sound totally different because now it's amazing and before it sounded terrible? Or does it sound totally different because I messed with it too much? And so working for Unqualified Media, they produce Anna Faris is Unqualified and Missy and Zach Might Bang, which I've been on since episode one. That show's like amazing. But basically the producer over there, Sim Sarna, had told me when we started out with Missy and Zach Might Bang, like, all right, sometimes we're going to take a 2-hour conversation and cut it down to 40 minutes. And that's just like what I want to do with this show, because I want to just like keep it straight up, pure fun, only the funny stuff, nothing really serious. And they sing songs on the show. They like improvise mm-hmm. music based on the conversation. So that's what it is. Like, it's all based around the songs, just like take out anything that doesn't really have anything to do with the songs, and then it'll be the show that we want it to be. So I think that it's important, especially when you have a lot of different podcasts, to give each show that you have its own identity. Like, with Unfortunate Associates, we decided from day one to do it completely safe for work, which for me, you know, like a 23-year-old cousin, like a sailor, that's hard. But I think that it was a nice challenge from day one to try and do something and see if I could be funny without cussing all the time, which it turns out that I can. It's just more difficult, you know?
And how about your co-hosts, as far as finding the right co-host for your shows? And I know sometimes you have alternating guests and alternating run through it and everything else, but what is your mindset going into that? Is it just finding someone that you can jive with, or is it someone that can really bring it to the show? Because I know a lot of times that's not the same person. The, you know, the individual that can really bring a lot of character to the show isn't someone that you can really jive with and co-host and bounce ideas off of.
Yeah. And it's really weird because like going into episode one of a show, I think to myself like, oh, me and my brother, like we've been best friends our entire lives. We have a 20 something year rapport. Like that'll obviously be a great dynamic. And then I do it for 8 episodes and it's terrible, you know? And then I, and then I do a show with somebody, my co-host on Unfortunate Associates, for example, B, somebody that I just like posted in the Series Unfortunate Events subreddit and said like, hey, does somebody want to do this? You're going to have to buy yourself like a $60 microphone and commit 1 to 2 hours of your time every week. But it's going to be a lot of fun and hopefully it'll be something that people enjoy listening to. And B just sort of like ran with that. Like they had no broadcasting experience. They had never done anything like this. And they've been like the best co-host ever this entire time, even though they had never done a podcast before. And so that's kind of the cool thing, I think, is meeting somebody for the first time and sort of getting to know them as the podcast goes, rather than picking somebody who you have a 20-year dynamic with. And so you have like all these inside jokes that the audience has to like try and catch up with.
Mm-hmm.
Like with B or with my co-host on Adam Sandcast, David Vader, I just like learn something new about them every week or something new about their environment, like New York or Australia. I've never known because like, I don't talk to them every single day. You know, I talk to them once or twice a week and it's still fresh all the time, which I think is cool.
Nice. You've got several podcasts. You work for a successful podcasting company or media company. How do you measure your success and what grade would you give yourself?
Sorry. I just noticed that maybe my Audacity is picking up. You're going to have to cut this out. My Audacity is picking up my webcam mic, which is such bullshit. And so hopefully my microphone mic is going to you and you're recording that. If not, I will totally redub my entire side into my Rode Procaster, because I have had people do that before. And this is such bullshit. This has never happened to me before.
I'm capturing both sides.
Okay, good.
Both sides separately in Audition. So.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, sorry about that.
I'm using my mixer to split the sound between left channel and right channel, and I've got it.
Okay, as long as you're happy with the audio that you're hearing, that's great. Okay. I don't know. I mean, I feel like I'm not somebody who likes to give numerical values to things or grades to things. I think that I'm doing really, 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 really well, though. Like, I mean, if I had to do it, I would have to say A. And I know that sounds cocky, but like in comparison to most other amateur podcasts out there, I'm making a living wage on this. There's room to move up in the business that I'm in and become like a producer at Unqualified. I've met a lot of really, really cool people. I've improved my social skills over the last 2.5 years, and I've like talked to my heroes. And I think that's incredible. Like, I didn't think that any of that stuff would happen when I started this out. And so I just have to say that's like an unmitigated success, I guess.
Yeah, that's sounds awesome, actually. I don't know if anybody could really dispute that. That's pretty impressive.
And I guess this is the only place that I can really brag about it and not be an asshole, so I'll do that, you know.
this show is called Undaunted, as in we're not afraid to talk about anything that anybody else is afraid to talk about. So
I consider myself a pretty verbose person. I think that I have a decent enough vocabulary, and I didn't know what undaunted meant until 12 seconds ago. I just kind of assumed that it was like, no, I guess that it does just sound like a cocky kind of person, doesn't it? It sounds like there's no holds barred. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. That's essentially, and if you look at the album art, one of the things that I love about this show is the album art that I came up with, unfortunately. I don't like reviewing my own artistic ability simply because I don't feel like I have very much, but I think the cover art for Undaunted, if you're listening to this right now on the show, look at your podcatcher and look at the cover art itself for Undaunted. And I think it came away perfect with the message of the show. It's cold, it's unfeeling, it's just straightforward, and it's right there in your face. It's got a little stone
calculated
to it. Yes. And it really, really comes through. And most of the shows have been pretty warm. I think I've had one show that it was just like, man, this individual does not like that I'm asking them the questions I told them I would ask them when we talked about doing the show. But other than that, it's been great. So
I did one interview with somebody who seemed to not want to be talking to us at all. And I think that he's actually a notoriously difficult interviewee. Like, we booked him on the show, and then we realized like 2 or 3 days before we had done it, and this was B's first interview ever also, so that must have been a stressful experience. We realized a few days before the show, like, everybody just says like, this guy is really difficult to talk to. We had a good enough time, I guess. I mean, he seemed to put up with our nonsense pretty well, so that was nice.
One of our most difficult episodes was we had a comedian on the show and someone we really, really looked up to, both Kent and I. And we've modeled certain aspects of the Richmond Misery podcast after this individual's comedy and how they hold themselves.
Was it Bob Saget?
It was not.
Or Jim Carrey?
It was okay. Not. No one that famous.
Louis C.K.
Jerry
Seinfeld.
And the show just died. Like, we released it. It's out there. But there's a certain fun and warmth of our typical show that was completely absent. And it was weird because that was one of the feelings that we got from this individual and their podcasts and how they've done their shows and how there's just this kindness to it, even if you're talking about something that you don't want to talk about. And then that same feeling was just bereft in that episode. And
that's the interesting thing, to see how people deal with that kind of situation. Like, I wish that I could say that I was like the guys from Hollywood Handbook or like Mark Maron talking to Gallagher or something, where like somebody will just like walk out on you and you'll be like, well, that was interesting. I guess this will make a really good episode and everybody will download it. Like, if that happened to me, I would be
mortified,
devastated. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't know if I could handle that right now with my 2 years of broadcasting experience, but maybe someday I'll be able to handle abject disaster in an episode. I don't know.
So what has been your worst podcasting experience as far as, I mean, everything seems pretty happy and cheerful, but there's, you know, what's the one mistake or one time that you were like, man, that could have just gone away and I'd have been just fine.
I think definitely, I mean, like I've said a couple of times, just like starting a podcast with somebody who, you know, is like moving in with your best friend in college, you know, it can work out. Maybe it will work out. Maybe it'll be the greatest thing ever. Maybe you'll have a lot of fun. But more than likely you're going to walk away just hating that person. And I had a couple of those kinds of episodes with my brother who, like, you know, we've had like a tumultuous relationship, best friends, worst enemies. And so I'm glad that I didn't release, you know, the one episode of that kind of exploded, you know. But aside from that, I guess that the worst thing that can possibly happen is just like you talk to somebody for an hour and then their audio gets lost because they don't know what they're doing. And that's not their fault. Usually that's my fault for not telling them well enough what to do. But then it's this weird situation where it's like, do you re-record immediately and tell the exact same jokes that you did last time and try and recapture that magic in some way? Or do you reschedule for a week from now? Or do you just say, sorry, that happened. Let's call it a day, wash your hands of this and never talk to each other again. And in my experience, doing it again right away actually has worked out. Like, I did an interview with this guy who created this online web series, Sam Sweetmilk, now Starship Goldfish, which is just like amazing. And it was like sort of this really popular thing online. And he was like so charming and fun to talk to, and then audio fell apart in the end, but like luckily he had a free hour and we just like did it again and it turned out even better. So, wow. You know, definitely technical malfunctions can be the worst thing about podcasting, especially doing it remotely.
We've lost audio once, but never so bad that I think we just called it a loss and just moved on with our lives. And
right.
And I don't know. I can see how that would be beneficial just to re-record it immediately, because even though you have the template there, you've already warmed up, you've already started the conversation, you've already kind of gotten to know each other and gotten in the mood and everything else. So I can see how that would work out.
Do you ever get to do shows in person with anybody? Like when you're doing it, the other show with your friend, do you guys get to actually meet up and do it, or do you have to do the Skype thing still?
Once in a while we do. We did a live show in South by Southwest this year. And
oh, that's cool.
That was insanely difficult. Going into the show, before we got on stage, we had probably 20 minutes of actual content, you know,
right,
storytelling and stuff like that, catching up on the week, which is what we do at the beginning. Then we had a guest coming on and we were going to do a game with the guest and with audience members. And that went actually, other than him and I losing every round to the audience, that went really well. It was a lot of fun. And then we had a closing bit to do to kind of wrap the show up and call it an hour and get the hell off stage. Our opening bit ended up being about 10 minutes. And that included our closing bit.
Awesome.
So,
and you guys were supposed to fill up half an hour or a full hour.
A full hour.
Awesome. Right.
And luckily the game went a little long, but yeah, it was just like all the plans, you know, the best laid plans laid to waste. And it was insane, but it was a lot of fun. And we have that first live show under our belt. So now we kind of know more what to expect for the next time.
Right. Did you find that your show caters to a well environment really well, a live environment really well? Because I've heard some podcasts that go to a live environment and it's amazing, you know, it's even better than when they do it in the studio. And then I've heard some podcasts that like I absolutely love every single week, but like they go to a live show somewhere and nobody knows who they are and nobody laughs at their jokes. And I'm like sitting there like, this is, I mean, there's no way I could have ever gone to this thing. It's in Australia, but I wish that I could have, because it seems like it, I don't know.
We have a live audience of about 30 people every week. It's not huge, but they're fairly dedicated, and they come in and they chat with us, and they feed us a bunch of ideas, and we bounce a lot of jokes and ideas off of them and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And our live audience was much of that same group, with some others that don't typically get to watch live. So we had an audience of maybe 50 people live, but it was on a Thursday afternoon at South By, before South By actually kicked off. And it was kind of a kickoff event for the Diamond Club, which is kind of our podcasting, you know, family.
Right.
And it started out as that was like the Diamond Club meetup / Ritual Misery live show. And it really went, as far as the audience goes, it went great. You know, and me and Ken, you know, we've known each other since freshman year, eighth grade or whatever. So we automatically have a good dynamic going back and forth. It was just a lack of having done it and knowing what to prepare for.
Yeah.
That kind of held it back, but it was still a decent show. And of course we released that live released it as a podcast, because there's only a few episodes we've ever held back. One of them was because it was a 3-hour, we spent an hour longer reviewing an Apple keynote than the Apple keynote itself. And that wasn't good content. So we didn't release that. And there's another one that was just complete crap. And at the end of it, me and Kent both just felt like it was not a good show. So we didn't release that one either.
So do you guys just do like the general shoot the shit format, or do you sort of have everything very structured out from the very beginning of the show, like what you're going to be talking about and all that?
We have show notes that we build through the week. We have a few segments that we hit every week. And then a lot of it really relies on our guest. If our guest puts in a lot of stuff in the show notes, then sometimes the beginning of the show, where we kind of just catch up on things and shoot the shit about being a geek, really eats up the entire time. And then we kind of hit our skits and get out. Other times we want to focus completely on the guest. So we'll run through our beginning section, really, you know, our act one, really quickly to get into talking to our guests. And so far, every time we've done that, it's been amazing. We have one episode with Jenny Josephson, who produces for Marketplace, and she's produced for Daily Tech News Show. And she's just an all around amazing person with a long history of being in the news or being a news getter, a reporter and producer and things like that.
Right.
And we cut it over to her for the middle act, and we went long, and it was like, we didn't stop laughing and having a good time for the entire show. And it's like, man, this could have been like 3 episodes worth of stuff. And, yeah, it's kind of dynamic like that, but that's essentially how we have our show structured. And most of the show notes is basically just things that are happening to us through the week, or things that we've noticed, articles we want to talk about, and we throw them in there so we don't forget, because Kent and I are both very forgetful.
Right. Yeah. And having like a structure to the show is, or notes to work off of, is always nice. Like, especially when you're doing kind of a recap show, like almost all of mine are, when you want to keep things in order and also make sure that you don't forget any of your amazing nuggets of comedy, which probably aren't all that good all the time. It's nice to have everything sort of laid out in front of you. Like, it's interesting. Like, sometimes I'll read my own notes from like 2 years ago or something like that and look at them and then be like laughing at the joke and be like, yeah, I wrote that, and I still think the same thing is funny now. So of course I'll find that amusing. I don't know.
Yeah, and just listening to your own past catalog can sometimes be enlightening and hurtful.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I just want to obliterate my first episodes of Cynical Cartoons from the earth and just like put them on a separate feed or put them on the website or something like that, so that I can stop getting 1-star reviews for how terrible my audio quality was 2.5 years ago. I mean, Jesus Christ, I have so many 1-star reviews just from being a terrible host when I started, but it's like, there's been so much improvement since then. I don't know how to sort of curb that, you know?
Mm. I mean, it's an interesting conundrum on whether or not you want to cut into your collection. There's a couple different solutions to that, but man, that's a whole nother subject, really.
Yeah.
Do you just cut them off? Do you leave them live on your site, but then cut them out of iTunes, you know, limit them down in iTunes so people just don't, you know, randomly find it and they actually have to search for those early episodes and therefore they've already hit the current stuff? Or do you you know, just leave it to where there's a limited time where you have your stuff available. You only got 20 episodes available on iTunes and Stitcher and everything else at any given time. Like, that's
right.
That's one of those.
Well, I kind of hate that, actually. I like hate the whole paywall thing. Like, if I'm going to take the episodes down and put them somewhere else, I want them to be as easily accessible as they are now. I just don't want new listeners to hear them, I guess. Like, if somebody loves me and loves my show and loves my content, then yeah, sure. Like, go for it. Go listen to them, even though I don't think they're very good. If somebody's finding me for the first time, you want to sort of put your best foot forward. And I think episode 47 is much more indicative of what the show is like from there on, you know? So I don't know. I guess I'll be making those decisions in the next couple weeks sometime.
Come on a podcast to talk about podcasting and find out you've got more work to do about podcasting.
Yeah.
Hey, one last thing that I like to ask is, what advice would you have to veterans and newbies coming into podcasting? Are there podcasts that you've listened to that you just, you know, you wish they would listen to, like Mark Maron, Why Can't You Just Do X? Or just new people that are coming in and they're thinking about doing a podcast. What words of advice would you have for them?
Yeah. I think I said it earlier on, but production quality is so vital. Like, you can have the best idea in the world and nobody will care because you sound terrible, you know? And if Joe Scorn-Levitt starts a podcast, then his podcast can sound terrible and people will listen to it. If you're, you know, Mike from New Orleans or something like that, nobody's going to give a shit unless you sound good and you have a good idea. So I definitely think also that everybody has something really super unique about them. And instead of just starting like a general like gaming or news or shoot the shit podcast, you could do something that only you can do, you know, like the Adam Sandcast. I thought that was such an original idea because who in the world would ever want to do that? And then now there's three Adam Sandler podcasts. So I guess I was wrong. but it seemed like something that only I could really do in my own unique way. And so I think that that's important for people to have a good concept going in, a good host dynamic, and good production quality. So I'd say those three things are important.
Awesome. And where can people find more about you, your shows, and all the things that you're doing on the old interwebs?
Yeah. If you guys want to follow me on Twitter, my handle is @FutureHorsePod, or you can check out my shows, all four of them, at FutureHorsePod.com. Yeah, that's about it. I mean, I'm not going to plug my Patreon on your show. That seems shitty, right?
Hey, it's your show. I mean, if that's one of the things that you think people should be doing.
Yeah, man. So yeah, I mean, patreon.com/futurehorse. It's trucking. I put up early episodes there, but really that's only for people that are deep into my catalog and just sort of want to hear stuff before it actually goes out officially.
Now, Future Horse Pod, let's explain that real quick.
Sure. I wanted to come up with something that sounded good and sounded like all encompassing sort of. I didn't want it to have to do with animation at all, even though that was my show at the time. And I liked the sound of Rooster Teeth, so I wanted to sort of use that format in some way, I guess. So, Future Horse, I guess, is the way, like, if you were to have a time traveling DeLorean and you went to the way back past, you know, Middle Ages times or the Wild Wild West, as is the case in Back to the Future 3, then that would be the way that you would describe your vehicle. Like, people are like, what in tarnation? And you just say, well, I guess it's a Future Horse. So, yeah, that's that.
Nice.
I have these lofty ideals that someday I'll be a film producer and my logo will be Future Horse. And it'll be, you know, a horse running and then turning into a jalopy and then a sports car and then a spaceship. It'll be great.
There you go. You should just work on that.
15 seconds long.
You should just work on that animation now and just put it as the little banner at the top of the page, right? So that's Tyler Marchant at futurehorsepod.com. Cruise on by there. You can get more about me and everything that I'm doing at one of my pseudonyms, at Ethan Kane on Twitter. Follow the show at Undaunted Cast, and you can cruise on by ritualmisery.com for everything that I'm doing. It ends up on ritualmisery.com. We have a good time over there. So cruise on over by there. Thank you to Kevin McCloud thank you to Kevin McCloud for allowing us to use your music. For me, for Tyler, and for all the aspiring and veteran podcasters, thank you for joining us on this journey.